All right. So today we're diving into this case, Johnson v. Priceline.
Okay.
And, you know, it went all the way up to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
Wow.
And you might think, what's the big deal about an online travel site, right?
Yeah.
But it really gets into this question of, you know, do these platforms have a legal obligation to act in our best interest?
That's right. And, you know, this whole Johnson v. Priceline case, it really gets into, like, you know, these companies like Priceline that have that name your own price feature,
right?
Whether they actually owe a fiduciary duty to their users.
Okay, so before we get into all the legal stuff, can you just like remind us how this name your own price thing even works?
Yeah, sure. So imagine you want to book a 4-star hotel, let's say in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
So with name your own price, on Priceline, you're not actually picking like a specific hotel.
Yeah. Here.
Instead, you're telling Priceline what you're willing to pay.
So
let's say like $125 a night.
Mm-hmm.
So Priceline, then they go through their inventory of hotels and they try to find one that matches what you're looking for.
Okay.
And that's willing to accept that price.
So if they find one, they book it for you and you only find out like what hotel it is, like after you've already like agreed to the price.
Right. Exactly. You don't know where you're staying until the deal's done.
Gotcha. So in this case, we've got Lee Johnson, who bid $125 for a 4-star hotel in Richmond.
Okay.
And ended up at the Omni Richmond Hotel.
Yeah.
And then we have Joey Kelly, who bid $150 for a 4-star in Boston
mm-hmm.
and got a room at the Sheraton Boston Hotel.
Okay.
So both of them sued Priceline, right?
That's right. Yeah. And their argument was that Priceline, you know, often knows that they can get those rooms for less than what the customer's bidding.
Right.
And they make a profit on that difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a spread between what you bid and the actual hotel rate.
Okay.
So Johnson and Kelly were arguing that, you know, this whole practice basically meant that Priceline was breaching their fiduciary duty.
Interesting.
They're saying, hey, you're supposed to be acting in my best interest,
right?
Not just making a profit off me. So it sounds like they thought Priceline was acting as like their agent.
Right.
Kind of like a real estate agent who's supposed to get you the best possible price on a house or something.
Exactly. And that's the key question here. Like, was Priceline acting as an agent?
Right.
Or were they just acting as a vendor?
Interesting.
And, you know, to answer that question, the court looked at three main things.
Okay.
You know, like first, did the customer make it clear that Priceline would be acting on their behalf?
Mm-hmm.
Did Priceline accept that role?
Right.
And then most importantly, did the customer have control over how Priceline went about finding that hotel room?
And that control element, that's where things get kind of tricky, right?
Absolutely, because even though you're setting the initial price with your bid, after that, you're basically in the dark.
Right.
You have no say in like which specific hotels they consider or what deals they're negotiating or any of the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, you just kind of like give up control the moment you hit like submit on that bid. So even though they initiated the whole process with their bids.
Yeah.
Johnson and Kelly didn't really have control over, like, how Priceline actually, like, fulfilled it.
Yeah, that's exactly how the court saw it. And actually, Judge Raggi, who wrote the opinion, he put it this way.
Okay.
He said, a name-your-own-price customer retains no right to instruct Priceline as to how it procures hotel reservations beyond the initial specifications.
Wow, that's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to suggest that even though it might feel like Priceline is working for you to get like the best deal.
Right.
Legally speaking, they're not.
Yeah.
They're more like a store selling you a product. You know, like
right.
They're offering a service at a set price and you either take it or leave it.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And I think it highlights why this whole concept of control is so crucial in determining whether there's actually a fiduciary duty there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a fiduciary relationship implies a level of trust and dependence.
Right.
Where one party's relying on the other to act in their best interests. But, you know, if you don't have control over how that other party's operating,
mm-hmm.
can you really say that they're acting on your behalf?
That's a good point. I'm also thinking about like all those William Shatner ads.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's like, you know, get a hotel for a great price.
Right.
Do you think those played any role in the plaintiff's arguments at all?
Oh, for sure. I mean, those ads definitely create a certain impression. You know, they kind of present Priceline as working for the customer.
Yeah.
And Johnson and Kelly definitely argued that that kind of reinforced the idea that Priceline was acting as their agent.
Right.
But, you know, ultimately the court found that those ads, while maybe suggestive,
mm-hmm.
they didn't explicitly promise that Priceline was obligated to get them the absolute best price.
So it seems like marketing and perception can be one thing.
Right.
But the legal reality based on like contracts and user agreements can be something else entirely.
Exactly. But there's more to unpack here, you know, besides fiduciary duty. Johnson and Kelly also claim that Priceline breached its contract.
Okay. Right.
Not disclosing its profit margin and that the whole name your own price thing was deceptive.
Right. Right.
But the court wasn't convinced.
So what were their reasons for, like, dismissing those arguments?
Well, on the contract issue, the court basically said that Priceline did what they were supposed to do.
Okay.
They provided a hotel room that matched the customer's specifications.
Right.
At the price that they agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no breach of contract there.
So they delivered what they promised, even if it wasn't necessarily like the cheapest possible option.
Exactly.
What about the deceptive practices claim?
Well, the court said that Priceline hadn't actually misrepresented anything.
Okay.
You know those William Shatner ads?
Right.
While they might imply that Priceline is on your side, they don't actually promise to reveal their profit margins.
Okay.
And most importantly, the terms of service clearly state that Priceline is acting as a merchant, not an agent. So Priceline was transparent about its role in the whole thing, even if it wasn't the role that some customers might have assumed.
Right.
This case really seems to highlight the importance of, like, actually reading those terms of service.
Absolutely. We often just click agree without really understanding what we're signing up for.
You're sure.
But in cases like this, those terms can have real legal consequences.
Okay, so we've covered, like, the specifics of the case. But what is Johnson v. Priceline? Like, what does it mean for just the average online consumer?
Right.
Like, should we be worried that these platforms aren't looking out for our best interests?
Well, I think it's a valid concern. You know, this case set a legal precedent that gives significant protection to these online platforms.
Okay.
Especially if their terms and conditions are really clear and upfront about their role.
So you're saying just because a platform feels like it's working for you,
right,
that doesn't necessarily mean they have a legal obligation to do so.
Exactly. And this has implications beyond just travel sites, you know? Think about, like, ride-sharing apps like Uber or home-sharing platforms like Airbnb.
Yeah.
They also use these kind of opaque pricing models,
right,
where you don't know exactly how much the driver or the host is actually getting.
Okay, yeah. That's making me think, if I, like, request an Uber, and the app says it's going to be $20, does that mean the driver gets the full $20?
Right.
Or is Uber taking a cut, just like Priceline was doing with the hotels?
That's a great question, and it illustrates how this ruling could potentially apply to all sorts of other tech companies.
Beautiful.
As long as, like, Uber or Airbnb are clear in their user agreements about how their pricing works, and they don't explicitly claim to be acting on your behalf,
right,
they might be able to avoid being held to a fiduciary standard.
So Johnson v. Priceline could basically be like a roadmap for other companies.
Yeah.
To structure their business in a way that, like, minimizes their legal risk.
Right.
Even if it means they're not legally bound to prioritize the customer's financial interests?
Yeah, that's one way to interpret it, for sure.
Wow.
And I think it really highlights how crucial it is to have that clear contractual language.
Right.
You know, both for the companies and for us as consumers, you know, we need to be aware of what we're actually agreeing to.
Right.
Especially when it comes to these online platforms where the inner workings are often hidden from us.
You know, thinking about this whole control thing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about those personal shopper services some online retailers offer where they claim to curate items just for you based on your tastes.
Right.
Does that sound like more of an agency relationship to you?
Well, it would depend on the specifics.
Right.
You know, like, if you have significant control over the personal shopper's choices,
right,
and the company is really marketing it as a truly personalized experience where they're acting on your behalf, then there might be a stronger case for a fiduciary duty.
Interesting. So even though Johnson v. Priceline seems to favor these, like, big tech companies, there are still, like, nuances and gray areas that could lead to different outcomes.
For sure.
Depending on how a particular service is structured and marketed.
Exactly. And that's where things get really interesting from a legal perspective.
Right.
You know, the court didn't completely rule out the possibility of an online platform being held to a fiduciary standard.
Oh, so there's still hope for us consumers.
Well,
maybe we're not totally at the mercy of algorithms and opaque pricing models.
Let's just say that the court left the door open to the idea that if a platform explicitly said they were acting as your agent,
okay,
or if the user had more control over the platform's actions after entering into an agreement, then a fiduciary duty could potentially exist.
So it's not like a simple black and white situation.
Right.
It's all about the details.
Exactly.
The wording of the contracts.
Yeah.
And like the specific relationship between the platform and the user.
Precisely. And as technology keeps evolving,
right,
I think we're going to see even more of these nuanced cases pop up. Sure. The lines are getting blurrier all the time.
For sure.
It's getting harder to define who's a customer, who's a provider, who's just a middleman in this whole digital marketplace.
It's fascinating, but also a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
What's like the one thing you hope listeners take away from this whole deep dive?
Awareness. You know, understand the terms of service, pay attention to how these platforms describe themselves, and don't hesitate to ask questions.
Good advice.
Knowledge is power, especially in the digital world.
It really makes you think about every time you click agree on those terms of service.
Yeah.
It's like you're taking a leap of faith.
That's a great way to put it.
And it makes me wonder, you know, what if a platform actually did clearly state that they were acting as your agent?
Oh, that's interesting.
Would that, like, shift things legally?
Well, it's a fascinating question. And I think Johnson v. Priceline actually left that door open.
Yeah.
The court didn't definitively say that no online platform could ever be held to a fiduciary standard.
Right.
They just said that based on, you know, the specific facts in this case.
With Priceline's terms of service and that lack of user control.
Right.
A fiduciary duty didn't exist there.
So hypothetically, if a company came right out and said, like, we are your trusted agent working tirelessly to get you the best deals,
mm-hmm.
would that change things?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that kind of language would create a much stronger argument for a fiduciary relationship.
Yeah.
But it would also expose that company to a whole new level of legal scrutiny.
Right, because if they're claiming to be acting in the user's best interest,
right,
they'd have to like actually back that up with their actions. It's almost like a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Companies might be tempted to use that kind of language to attract customers
mm-hmm.
and build trust,
right,
but then they're also taking on a lot more legal risk.
For sure, and it's not just about legal risk either.
Oh, okay.
There's also the ethical dimension.
Right.
You know, if a company claims to be your advocate, but their actions don't really match up,
mm-hmm.
that can lead to a loss of trust and really damage their reputation.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think about how all these legal interpretations are going to evolve as technology keeps advancing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we're seeing all these new business models pop up all mm-hmm. the time.
Right.
And it's getting even more complicated to understand the relationships between, like, platforms and users and service providers.
Exactly. You know, the lines are becoming increasingly blurred.
Totally.
Think about, like, those AI-powered personal shopping assistants that are starting to emerge.
Yeah.
You know, they analyze all your past purchases and your browsing history, even your social media activity to recommend products.
So are they acting as your agent or a vendor?
Right. It's like,
or something else completely.
Something else entirely.
Yeah.
And these are the kinds of questions that courts are going to be grappling with more and more in the years to come.
Well, this has been a really insightful deep dive.
Thanks.
For our listeners who might be feeling a little overwhelmed by all of this.
Yeah.
What's the one key takeaway you want them to remember?
I'd say be an informed consumer. You know, understand the terms that you're agreeing to, pay attention to how companies describe themselves, and don't be afraid to ask questions.
Good advice.
Knowledge is power, especially in the digital age.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into Johnson v. Priceline.
Great.
You know, it's a case that I think continues to resonate in today's digital landscape.
Absolutely.
And it reminds us that the relationship between platforms and users is complex and constantly evolving.
Yeah.
It's been great exploring these issues with you.
Likewise.
Until next time, stay curious. And remember, sometimes the most interesting questions are the ones without easy answers.